librarian Randall Parsons. Her familiarity with the manuscript and with Mr. Muir's expressed and penciled intentions of revision and arrangement made her the logical person to prepare it in final form for publication. It was a task to which she brought devotion as well as ability. The labor involved was the greater in order that the finished work might exhibit the last touches of Muir's master hand and yet contain nothing that did not flow from his pen. All readers of this book will feel grateful for her labor of love. I add these prefatory lines to the work of my departed friend with pensive misgiving, knowing that he would have deprecated any discharge of musketry over his grave. His daughters, Mrs. Thomas Ray Hanna and Mrs. Buell Alvin Funk, have honored me with the request to transmit the manuscript for publication, and later to consider with them what salvage may be made from among their father's unpublished writings. They also wish me to express their grateful acknowledgments to Houghton Mifflin Company, with whom John Muir has always maintained close and friendly relations. William Frederick Beatty, Berkeley, California, May 1915. Part 1. The Trip of 1879. Chapter 1. Puget Sound and British Columbia. After 11 years of study and exploration in the Sierra Nevada of California and the mountain ranges of the Great Basin, studying in particular their glaciers, forests, and wildlife, above all their ancient glaciers and the influence they exerted in sculpturing the rocks over which they passed with tremendous pressure, making new landscapes, scenery, and beauty which so mysteriously influence every human being, and to some extent all life, I was anxious to gain some knowledge of the regions to the northward about Puget Sound in Alaska. With this grand object in view, I left San Francisco in May 1879 on the steamer Dakota, without any definite plan, as with the exception of a few of the Oregon peaks and their forests, all the wild north was new to me. To the mountaineer, a sea voyage is a grand, inspiring, restful change. For forests and plains with their flowers and fruits, we have new scenery, new life of every sort. Water hills and dales in eternal visible motion for rock waves, types of permanence. It was curious to note how suddenly the eager countenances of the passengers were darkened as soon as the good ship passed through the Golden Gate and began to heave on the waves of the open ocean. The crowded deck was speedily deserted on account of seasickness. It seemed strange that nearly everyone afflicted should be more or less ashamed. Next morning, a strong wind was blowing, and the sea was gray and white, with long breaking waves, across which the Dakota was racing half buried in spray. Very few of the passengers were on deck to enjoy the wild scenery. Every wave seemed to be making enthusiastic, eager haste to the shore, with long, irised tresses streaming from its tops, some of its outer fringes borne away in scud to refresh the wind, all the rolling, pitching, flying water exulting in the beauty of rainbow light. Gulls and albatrosses, strong, glad life in the midst of the stormy beauty, skimmed the waves against the wind, seemingly without effort, oftentimes flying nearly a mile without a single wing beat, gracefully swaying from side to side and tracing the curves of the briny water hills with the finest precision, now and then just grazing the highest. And yonder, glistening amid the irised spray, is still more striking revelation of warm life in the so-called howling waste. A half dozen whales, their broad backs like glaciated bosses of granite, heaving aloft in near view, spouting lustily, drawing a long breath, and plunging down home in colossal health and comfort. A merry school of porpoises, a square mile of them, suddenly appear, tossing themselves into the air in abounding strength and hilarity, adding foam to the waves and making all the wilderness wilder. One cannot but feel sympathy with and be proud of these brave neighbors, fellow citizens in the commonwealth of the world, making a living like the rest of us. Our good ship also seemed like a thing of life, its great iron heart beating on through calm and storm, a truly noble spectacle. But think of the hearts of these whales, beating warm against the sea, day and night, through dark and light, on and on for centuries. How the red blood must rush and gurgle in and out, bucketfuls, barrelfuls at a beat. The cloud colors of one of the four sunsets enjoyed on the voyage were remarkably pure and rich in tone. There was a well-defined range of cumuli a few degrees above the horizon and a massive dark gray rain cloud above it, from which depended long, bent fringes overlapping the lower cumuli and partially veiling them. And from time to time, sunbeams poured through narrow openings and painted the exposed